Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act in 2010, but last week an important provision of that law was rolled back as part of the omnibus spending bill. Here to tell us what this means for the future of financial regulation is Nobel Prize-winning economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. Paul, welcome back to our show. It's always a pleasure.
Hi there. Good to be on.
Language in the budget bill eliminated Section 716 of Dodd-Frank. What was Section 716 designed to regulate?
Okay. It was taking a particular kind of risky activity that financial institutions can engage in, which is trading in, well, basically fancy financial instruments, derivatives of kinds that are not very well specified. Under Dodd-Frank, they were not allowed to do that on the books of the pieces of their institution that are regular banks with insured deposits. They were basically not allowed in that blatant a way to expose taxpayers to the risk of losses on those things, and now they are. So it took something that was supposed to fence off some of the fancier, more elaborate, more dubious parts of financial stuff. It's supposed to fence that off from ordinary banking, and now the fence has been torn down.
Because banks can now have insured parts and uninsured parts?
Well,
or
they've
had that?
I mean, basically, a bank has, you know, we think of a bank as a big marble building with a row of tellers, and that's conventional banking, and that's your deposits in those banks are insured. The FDIC, the big sign in the window says FDIC insured deposits. Now, banks these days, think about Citigroup, that's only a piece of their business. They have other parts that are raising money in other ways and doing other kinds of stuff, and that stuff is in general not insured. That doesn't mean it doesn't sometimes get bailed out in a crisis, but there's no legal requirement that it gets bailed out. And so a minimal thing you would want to do on financial reform is say, look, if you're going to have the benefit of a taxpayer guarantee, if you're going to have deposits that people don't worry about because they know that the Fed stand behind them, then you can't gamble with that money. And Wall Street just got Congress to say, oh, yes, you can, actually.
Didn't exotic derivatives at insured institutions play a role in the financial meltdown of 2008?
Well, I will say there's a question. Exotic derivatives certainly played a big role in the meltdown. How much it mattered that they were at insured institutions is not clear. In fact, the really bad stuff, the stuff that almost brought the world economy to its knees, was at uninsured institutions. So one consolation here is that this may not actually matter that much. Lehman Brothers had no insured deposits. It was raising its money on the repo market. It was basically borrowing short term, and so there was no official guarantee. There was none of that, and this change in regulation would not have affected what happened to Lehman one way or the other. So the funny thing was that insured institutions, regular old banks, were not that big a problem because they were insured. They may have been doing bad stuff, but you didn't have old-fashioned bank runs. What we had was runs on the unconventional, on the new-fashioned banks, and this regulation is neither here nor there as far as that's concerned.
Why has there been so much interest in repealing Section 716?
Well, because if you're a banker, you like the idea of being able to gamble with insured deposits, because you can raise money by attracting deposits, no questions asked, because the man in the street doesn't care. Person in the street, he or she knows that the money is guaranteed by the FDIC, and then if you can do funny stuff with it, you can play heads I win, tails the taxpayer loses. It's great. I mean, that's basically what happened to the savings and loans. That's an old scandal, but they lost an enormous amount of money because they were set free to do pretty much whatever they liked with money they raised through insured deposits, and the result was, in the end, a huge loss to taxpayers.
And I once asked Ben Bradley why the Washington Post didn't do the kind of investigative reporting on the savings and loan situation that it had done on Watergate. And he said, because readers' eyes glaze over. Is that a problem, that the public really doesn't understand these things?
Yeah, particularly this particular one. What happened in the omnibus legislation was designed to be an eye-glazing experience. Wall Street wants to undo the whole structure of regulation. They want to go back to, they want the chance to have the, you know, to do it all over again, but they're going to want to do it in small installments that are extremely hard to explain, so they don't make good newspaper stories.
It's been reported that Citigroup wrote the deregulation language in the spending bill. Does that sort of thing happen often?
Yeah, more than we'd like to. Although, you have to wonder, isn't that, that's pretty raw, right? His Citigroup, Citigroup survived this crisis only thanks to taxpayers. Citigroup's push for deregulation certainly played a role in getting us into the crisis. And after so little time, to actually have Citigroup in there literally writing the language of a law that gives it the right to screw up and screw up the rest of us all over again is really quite amazing.
We have a clip of Senator Elizabeth Warren talking about that. I'd like to play that now.
You know, there's a lot of talk lately about how Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. There's a lot of talk coming from Citigroup about how Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. So let me say this to anyone who is listening at Citi. I agree with you. Dodd-Frank isn't perfect. It should have broken you into pieces.
I'm not sure if Citigroup wanted to hear that.
No, and I think that Citigroup exists only because Sandy Weill exerted his political power to get a change in the law to allow you to merge an old-fashioned conventional bank, Citibank, with an insurance company and a bunch of other stuff. And that was really a bad idea, clearly it was a really bad idea. I don't think that breaking up institutions like Citigroup would necessarily prevent another crisis, because the interesting thing about the financial crisis is that we managed to mess up on so many direct dimensions. But it's clearly, the trouble with Dodd-Frank is it is weaker than it should be. And that's, Elizabeth Warren is totally right on that. If you have a problem with Dodd-Frank, it should not be that it's restricting the ability of those wonderful bankers to do innovative things.
A number of Democrats balked at the idea. Were you surprised that the White House pushed for passage of the spending bill anyway?
Yeah, not really. No, I'm sorry. I'm not really surprised, because I think the White House was figuring that if they're going to have a confrontation and a government shutdown, they're going to want to choose the ground a little more carefully. I mean, there was no question that this was a horrific thing that to be included. On the other hand, it's probably not that important. This is not the core of Dodd-Frank. So is this where you want to draw the line and fight your battle? And that's arguable. Elizabeth Warren made one judgment. The White House made a different one. I think we're talking tactics here, not fundamentals.
We're talking to Paul Krugman, a Nobel laureate and a New York Times columnist. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The Hill reported yesterday that banks and financial institutions plan an aggressive push to dismantle other parts of Dodd-Frank, including easing new requirements on mortgages and overhauling the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Either of those moves concern you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now we're talking really seriously. Core parts. I mean, the core things in Dodd-Frank are consumer financial protection, which is, of course, Elizabeth Warren's creation, which has been very successful so far, and that's why the banks hate it. The special extra regulations on strategically important institutions, which they would want to kill. Those are things like requiring them to hold more capital. Orderly resolution authority, which is the ability basically to seize something like Citigroup and take it apart if it turns out to be a big problem, which is Elizabeth Warren's point. So those are the core things. If they manage to undo any or all of those, then we have had a complete rollback. The bad guys have won a complete triumph.
We've been hearing a lot about banks creating living wills. Do you know how far along banks are in that process?
And I don't actually have a sense. But, I mean, the living wills, only make sense if you have orderly liquidation authority so that the banks can be told, okay, that's it, we're going to break you up. Let's see your living will that specifies how we're going to do that. So all of this is part and parcel. If you don't maintain the pieces of the law that set the stage for doing that. Basically, what you want is a way that if we do need to bail out the financial system next time, and there will be a next time, we don't have to bail out the bankers again. We just keep the system going, but not the people who created the crisis. And of course, the bankers don't like that.
Would Citibank bring us all down with it if that happened?
Yeah, you really did not want. I mean, I remember 2008, 2009. You did not want Citigroup to go into liquidation. You didn't want them just completely unable to do business. What you wanted was a way to keep them operating, a really major bank. You know, you wanted people to be able to take cash out of windows, but also you want people to be able to continue all the transactions with the various arms of that octopus that they've been doing. But you wanted to do that in a way that did not allow Citigroup's stockholders, Citigroup's executives to walk away to escape from the damage that they had done and to go back and to lobby in Congress to do more damage. And unfortunately, we didn't do that.
Were you surprised that it was Citigroup and not J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon writing this?
Yeah, I'm a little bit because it's so raw. I mean, I've been in this business for a long time, and Citi, one way or another, Citi has been saved by the taxpayers from its own irresponsibility again and again. They were at the core of the Latin American debt crisis in 1982. They were at the core of the commercial loan disaster in the early 1990s. And here they are again. And the idea that this company, which has been so consistently a symbol because of this reality of everything that's wrong with Wall Street and its financial influence, that they would get to literally write legislation on their own behalf again really boggles the mind.
This week you wrote that the incoming Congress's agenda is all about rewarding bad actors.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Stuff. Well, I meant that as far as financial industry, and if you ask who are they for, who is this Congress representing? You know, allegedly the districts, the states, but if you ask, you know, where's the money coming from, it would be Wall Street, which has swung very heavily behind Republicans. It used to be split its money between the two parties, but now it's very much Republican. It would be energy industries and especially the biggest polluters. So we're really looking at the people who threaten our financial stability and the people who threaten our planet have gone and bought themselves one branch of government.
Although, as long as President Obama has veto power, how much can actually be done? Although, in this case, as you point out, he has gone along with this new bill that so few people are happy about.
Yeah, the problem is, first, that on some things you want further action. I mean, Dodd-Frank ought to be made stronger. Obviously, that's not going to happen given this Congress. And you need implementation. There'll be attempts to undermine the funding. There'll be attempts to do what just happened, which is to attach deregulation to other stuff and dare the president to veto it when there are things that he wants or he thinks that America needs that are in the rest of the bill. So it would be nice to say that no damage will be done as long as he's in the White House, but that's unfortunately not a safe bet.
Paul Krugman writes a couple of columns each week for the New York Times. He is a Nobel laureate, and it has been my great pleasure to have him on our show again.
Thanks so much for having me on.